and if people come on, they'll come on. So I want to welcome you. For those of you that don't know me, I am the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And this affinity group was brought about because people in the network were interested in talking about this conversation. So we got Peggy and Susan from JFSLA on board, and they gladly stepped up and stepped in to chair this affinity group. And we've got all sorts of tricks up our sleeve for you today. So we look forward to the conversation. And if everyone can, and they did, we're all set. That's it. Who's going next?
Good morning, everyone. And I have to say that Susan and I stepped in after there had already been lots of meetings and planning, I think, in terms of other participants, some of whom are on the call. So we are facilitators, not necessarily experts, and we love to facilitate this particular conversation. We want to start today with a poll because we really want to know why people are here and what they would like us to address.
No, that's not the poll. The poll for this is the, can you see it?
Yes.
That's the survey.
Well, it's so that we have a better understanding of who is here.
Yes.
Then we have a follow-up questionnaire after the meeting to get more to the specifics of what you would like to focus on. Sorry. But we did want to get a sense of who is on the call, because the first call that we had, there were certainly a number of participants who were not necessarily part of the community, but who wanted to learn more. We want to know who's coming to this particular meeting. So if you don't mind taking 2 minutes to fill out the poll.
When I try to press submit, Peggy, it doesn't work.
Yeah, Peggy, I've had the same experience. I happen to have answered yes in question one. So I went on to question two, and I guess I need to do something in question three in order for me to be able to submit.
Huh. Lisa? I did all three.
You have to answer all three.
I did, but it still wouldn't submit.
Huh. And if you're answering no, if you answered no for one and then answered three, it will not let you submit either.
Oy vavoy, what do I know? You're kidding. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is not helpful then, potentially, this poll.
Mm-hmm. Well, question number one is helpful.
Okay.
We can see something on our end, sure.
Yeah. Okay, so only half of us have done it. Let's the other half do it. Oh, they can't
you
submit,
can't,
you're saying.
You can't submit.
Okay, so let's do, can we do a...
can we do it?
Hand raising? Will that work for people?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so do you consider yourself a member of the Orthodox community? How many of us on here? AY and Laurie, we can't see you. Okay, so that's around six of all of us. Okay, and then characterizing modern Orthodox of those six. Okay. Two.
And then someone wrote in the chat correctly, should we say other for two? Because one could be something other.
Okay, other, what are others?
I was just trying to think of a workaround so everyone could complete the chat or the poll, like if it were to work. Because I was someone who said no to the first and I just couldn't click through, so.
Okay, so I'm not sure how helpful that poll was.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, we can see, however, the percentage or the number of people who at least answered question number one. That is coming through.
Yeah.
Okay. Not sure why, but it is.
Okay.
Oh, so that was.
Okay.
Oh.
I'm going to stop this, right? We're not.
I would guess that part of your poll is to understand if all of us are Orthodox or not. And so clearly the answer is no, not everyone here is Orthodox. And so I can just share what I put as part of answer number three, right? Which didn't have a lot of choices, but I may not be a member of the Orthodox community myself, but I join this group, recognizing that I'm here to serve the entire Jewish community. And so I need to have a deeper understanding of what that means to do outreach to the Orthodox community and how they may perceive, you know, my messaging, my, you know, extension of a hand. And so this has been super helpful for me to understand where there might be barriers, how I could lower them, you know, maybe what language I could use. So I don't know if that resonates with the rest of the people, but I feel like that was probably the intention of your poll.
That was completely the intention. And by the way, we have a summary here that speaks to that, that a goodly percentage are here because they're wanting to achieve exactly what you described.
And I know that we're planning on having a follow-up educational training with Deanie and David and Liz and who else is on? I don't see anyone else on our committee coming up in May. And I'll put that in the chat so you can mark your calendars. And that's going to be exactly what you're talking about. We're going to hopefully be able to talk with members of the community who of JFS agencies who work with members of the community, and they're going to tell us what it is that those members of the community would need from JFS professionals. Am I saying it correctly, Deanie? So stay tuned, and someone put in the chat when it is, that would be terrific.
Right, and by the way, we are, after this meeting, we are going to send you a poll, another, not a poll, but a questionnaire. It has a lot more detail so that we can understand what would be most useful to you as we go forward in this format. So it sounds like today it would be helpful to talk more about outreach, which is what came out of our early meetings and what, and thank you, Deanie, you just wrote that May 11th is the training. That hopefully everyone will spread the word and also participate. So building on what Carol said, and thank you for your summary there, that made sense to a lot of us. Let's have a discussion about your challenges in outreach and engagement and or programming. And what has worked, and what you would need in order to be more effective or more successful.
Who would like to respond to that question?
I don't mind going. So when I got to Jewish Family Service in the Cincinnati area, we were not serving too many members of the Orthodox communities in our region. And so we've really worked hard to build strong ties and strong relationships and be of value. And today, I would say we've been extremely successful. I have very close relationships with the congregational rabbis at all of the Orthodox synagogues in the region. I still find though that there are times when it's hard for me to understand kind of, and I'll say I'm so close. I absolutely love this rabbi who runs our most conservative shul in the city. And, you know, I think there's a lot of trust between us, and yet he's still looking to bring in programs from outside the region that I think are redundant to what we do. And so I guess my question there is, you know, and I'm close enough to him that I feel like I can ask why, like, is there a gap? Is there something that JFS isn't doing? But, you know, I'm struggling with this idea that there's one organization entrusted with kind of mental health services in Jewish Cincinnati, and it should be us. But maybe there's some role this other organization can play that we just can't, and I don't get it. So if you could react to that, like, how do we avoid in a small market like ours with 31,000 Jewish households, you know, having redundant infrastructures?
I have a question. So what exactly is the programs or program or programs that you are offering and that they're doing that are redundant? Maybe if we understand a little more, then perhaps we can respond.
I think one is case management. So there's a person in the community who had a bad experience with JFS early on. And that's the work that we've done to clean up, and we have cleaned it up. And her rabbi, you know, it's like what you're talking about happened a long time ago and isn't true today. But she's out there providing case management as a lay person with no infrastructure, and also, you know, helping people to connect with mental health providers. So she's doing both of those things kind of independently.
And she's not trained professionally, obviously, you said?
Not. She is not.
Is she providing that, Liz, like at no charge? Like she's just doing it as a volunteer, you're saying?
Yeah. Which is, we provide it at no charge, so.
And have you explored the reason why the rabbi wants to use somebody who isn't professional as opposed to somebody who's trained? I mean, what is the rationale behind it? Because she's part of the Orthodox community and understands the nuances and culture? Do you think it has anything to do with that?
No, I think, you know, I've said to him, she's running a program called Tikvaseinu, which destigmatizes mental health challenges and has been incredibly valuable.
Okay.
And so he and I have discussed the fact that when people need additional support, that then the handoff should come from Tikvaseinu or whatever other touch point to Jewish Family Service. And that she doesn't have the training, the expertise, the, you know, liability insurance, and frankly, the capacity at certain times of the year to play that role. And he agrees, that's the JFS role. But, you know, it's still, you know, she very recently articulated again that they wanted to provide case management. And her rabbi also is, you know, talking to a program out of Cleveland that I think overlaps a little with what we do. And so I guess, you know, my question is, you know, I'm hoping that we can have one entity that supports all versus having to have a specialized Orthodox specific program that overlaps what we do. And how do you continue to have those conversations? And frankly, I don't know everything this other organization does. And, you know, maybe it's not an overlap and maybe they can do things that we just can't, but, you know, it's a challenge. It's an ongoing challenge.
It seems like that's a challenge for many communities. I don't think you're alone. You're right.
Yeah, I wanted to share, Liz, that's come to a head actually here in San Diego, as we've for the last couple of years been working as a community to address Jewish poverty. Some tensions that were already there. There was the Jewish gift closet functioning in town, you know, with paraprofessionals, volunteers who were doing similar work, but now an actual established organization has been developed. And it's primarily through our South African Jewish community, which we have a big population of here, which is mostly tied to the Orthodox community in town. And, you know, they now actually have hired a licensed social worker to oversee all of the volunteers. So at least there's that. But there was a lot of discussion I had with them about, like, you know, why do you need to duplicate services if JFS is here? And they certainly had critiques about what they felt about our accessibility or what we should be doing. There was a different standard of care. They thought we should never refer a Jewish client to a shelter, for instance. And, you know, the reality was, as much as it was frustrating to me that I saw them as duplicating services, the reality is they did kind of have a different philosophy. Whereas, you know, we would say to a client, you know, like, we can't put you up in a hotel. We can't necessarily pay months of rent without a plan, right? So our first referral might be to a shelter when we then work on, you know, a way to be more sustainable, certainly. but they wouldn't even consider the shelter. So they are fundraising. They're using GoFundMe pages. They now have a program where you can like adopt a family. And so some of it has been interesting because I'm trying to now figure out like, okay, if these are things they can do, how do I appropriately utilize them as a referral as well? Right. So I'm trying instead of like, I think my gut instinct was, this is the role of JFS, like trust JFS. And for whatever reason, I'm having to recognize like some of that trust isn't there. Mm-hmm. And now I'm trying to build the bridge and trying to figure out, okay, how do we collaborate? And eventually if we build the bridge and we are collaborating, maybe that duplication will become so obvious and they will say, okay, we should fine tune our services to only be these things that JFS isn't doing. But in the meantime, I feel like my strategy at this point has been to just lean in and say, okay, great. Let's figure out what you offer, what I offer, because they now have an army of what they call angels of like, I don't know, their vision is to have an army of 30 lay, you know, community members who they are angels who they pair with every single client to stand beside them and walk beside them. And I will say it's caused some confusion because the angels call our case manager and think we're doing something. And it's, so we're trying to work out communication strategies and workflows and all of that. But I will tell you, those angels are doing some things that my staff don't have the capacity to do. And so I've tried to tell my staff, lean into the fact that this person has an angel who's now willing to make all the phone calls to all the apartment complexes to see if there's an opening instead of us telling them about it, handing them a list of resources and saying, we'll follow up in a week to see what progress you've made. They have another team member on their side. So I hear you because I've had that frustration and I've not understood why the trust isn't there. And at this point, like it's come to like, there's a, literally a formal organization now that I'm just like, I can either fight against it or I can lean into it and figure out how to work together. Carol, and then the last thing I just want to,
Go
ahead.
I had a question. Did you have to sign a memorandum of understanding with that group so that your case managers could speak to these volunteers? Because wouldn't it be HIPAA? Like
so we have to have a release of information. And we've made that very clear to them that, and they may not feel like they need a release of information. I don't know if they feel HIPAA applies to them or any of those things, but where possible, part of this has been when they refer a client, one of the first things we say is, you know, we got your name from the Kindness Initiative, which is what they call themselves. And in order to, you know, be able to collaborate on your care, you know, and have a team of support, we try to put it in a really positive light. We would love to have you sign a release of information so we can keep them up to date on the progress with us. And of course they have absolute right to say no. But I know that they have asked for us to have meetings where we compare client lists and do case consults. And I've been really clear that can only happen with clients who've resigned the release. We can't give you our entire client list because they want to make sure that if we're giving money and they're giving money, how do we know we're not duplicating services? And so for the best of our ability, we do that with the release of information, but we can't do it across the board. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I just wanted to mention out of our last conversation with this group, I can't remember who was giving the presentation last time about what some of the historic barriers have been with the Orthodox community, but I know foster care came up and, you know, the kind of concern of children being placed in Christian homes rather than Jewish homes. And so maybe a kind of reticence to calling CPS or things like that. And I will just say that came up for me just this last week with a rabbi who has gone to the extent of getting himself and his wife certified to become foster parents just to try to help a family they know and take in their child. So I just wanted to say like it made so much more sense to me this past week, having been a part of this group, to really understand the dynamics of what was happening there. And I just wanted to say how that, I mean, I just wanted a kernel of how this has already really helped me this conversation. So thank you.
Terrific.
Can I ask a follow-up? That was hugely helpful. Thank you. And is there any, so first I think that we can't do everything and we're not trying to do everything. So piece of it is understanding where's the gap that we can't fill and we shouldn't fill and what's the appropriate role. And then the other piece of it is as a small community here, you know, is there a role for our funders at the Federation and the Foundation to also help us bridge some of these questions. And so we had somebody in the community make a request for funding for a psychologist, and that was run past me. And I was like, well, why would they do that? You know, A, do they have the capacity to manage it? B, you're talking healthcare billing. C, you know, so there is some collaboration that way, but I just wonder what you've experienced in San Diego or anyone else on this call in terms of funders also playing a role in helping us bridge some of that.
Is there anyone else who can speak to that? I know we can, but I'm going to hold back, and hopefully someone in the group has something, an experience with that.
So Liz, I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but I just will put out that has been the sticking point that I haven't been able to resolve, and I've had to leave to my CEO because I have to do the work and I have to build that bridge and that relationship. But there's certainly, that's part of where that tension lies within San Diego right now, is because the other group is going out and fundraising, and kind of their messaging is like, we really help the Jews in our community, right? And they kind of use this idea that JFS helps everyone and the Jews, like a little bit like, well, you could give to JFS, and I know they say they help the Jews, but like they don't do it to the extent we do. Like we will put them up in a hotel versus give the shelter. So there's a little bit of competition for funding right now, which has been difficult. And I will just say to try to hold both building the bridge and the relationship and leaning in and collaborating, like I couldn't hold that piece too. So I had to tell my CEO, you work that out while I try to make a beneficial relationship over here. So
I can speak to that a little bit for LA, because the Jewish Federation does play a huge role in this for us. They are the convener of these various groups. They bring us together. We are the lead agency in what they call the Ezra Network. And the network includes encompasses three agencies that are funded in part. We're certainly not wholly funded by them, but about 8% of our funding comes from the Jewish Federation, and it is specific to caring for Jews in need. And so that includes the Orthodox community, and the convening tends to be on their end, which sort of alleviates the need for us to do that. But it is complex, and I think when you realize, in our case, it's a large community and very varied, and they will raise funds and they will take care of their own. And that makes complete sense. So it is a matter of partnering. Our experience to some degree is that when things get so difficult to manage, someone who really becomes too much for the community, then they tend to reach out to us. But what we have tried is to engage in earlier conversations so that they understand how we can be partners in assisting these particular constituents. So it is very complicated, but Federation does and can have a role depending on how they use their own dollars. Anyone else with similar challenges or other challenges?
Or want to respond to what anyone else has said, of course.
Well, this is Judy from Boston. I probably am I the only JVS?
I think so. No, Liz.
Oh, Liz, okay. Not. All right. So we're very close to our federation here in Boston, and all the providers, the two family service agencies and another one called Yad Chesed and JVS are all partners in the so-called anti-poverty initiative. And but I notice I do outreach to all of the congregation, the like 50 or 60 synagogues in the greater Boston area, among which are Orthodox. I've just had a Zoom meeting with the rabbi of one of Young Israel of Brookline and the rabbi of Young Israel of Sharon, another suburb, is on my Jewish services committee. He's unbelievably helpful. The thing is, we're the only employment provider in the Jewish community, and relatively few in the Orthodox community come to us. And I've never quite figured out why, because before I took this position, I was the senior director of professional career services at JVS. I'm still not sure why we don't attract too many in the various Orthodox communities to come to us for career help, but we're always available. Mm-hmm. And the Federation has their own outreach, especially in COVID, to the and they're very well, respected in the Orthodox community and helped a lot of the smaller shuls, get connected in a technological way during the, pandemic. Not for services, they won't do services online, but in many, 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 many other ways. And also even providing hardware to some of the members who didn't have it. One area where we have no problem attracting members of the Orthodox community is we manage the scholarship program for the Federation. And we have always been very successful in attracting Orthodox families to apply for scholarships. But employment, not so much.
Judy, I want to just piggyback on the vocational side. The Ezra Network that was created in LA has three components. One is us, JFS, for the social services. One is Beit Tzedek for legal issues. And the third is, in fact, the vocational service. So Southern California, they call themselves now. But it is those three components as partners of the network, so that hopefully there is kind of a continuum of care. And I don't know, to be honest, the level of participation on their end from the Orthodox community. It's something I'll check into.
Yeah, that'd be great to learn.
Hey, why did you?
Yeah, I do. I think this is a great conversation. I have a few thoughts, okay? In no particular order, I do a lot of traveling, so I'm in a lot of different communities and I see a lot of different models. I think that it needs to be researched which models are currently working, integrating the Orthodox community within Jewish family services. I believe Detroit, I think it works really well over there. Everybody is working together. I used to do NCSY in Chicago, and I think David is involved with the school that I used to send kids to. Works really well with the Orthodox community. I think in South Florida, and there are probably other places as well, and I think somebody needs to do the research and figure out how they're doing it, number one. Number two is how many of the Orthodox rabbis and how many of the Orthodox board, Orthodox lay people, not for fundraising purposes, but how many of them have been invited to join the boards of Jewish family services so that they can become aware of the services that are being offered, and they're invested because they're involved. Once they're involved, they'll reach out to their people and they'll let them know, hey, this service is available, this service is available, and they'll make it happen. I think on the last call that we had, or maybe the one before that, there was some talk about, with COVID-19, the opportunity to Zoom with the rabbis so that you don't have to have the face-to-face in-person meetings with them. I don't know how many people took advantage of that, but that's a great opportunity to just get on the phone with them and say, hey, do you got a half an hour to Zoom? And then just tell them what it is that you're doing and try to get them involved in some way, shape, or form. I think it's really important, to be able to do that. Yeah, that's about it.
That's a good idea. How many people here have a member of the Orthodox community on their boards? Okay, so look.
Our CEO.
Looks like my hand wasn't up, but that's interesting. Okay.
I'll also say that we invited members of the Orthodox community, in particular, some of the rabbinic leaders to be part of steering committees as well, and help us fix things that we might say were broken in terms of barriers to access and comfort and cultural competency. And that has gone a long way.
I really it resonated for me what Liz said before, and even what you're saying now, is that you've fixed some things that were broken. And I think that in Detroit, we've done the same. We have our work to do, and we've done a tremendous amount of work. But I also sometimes feel this this ceiling, like we will still be JFS, and there are certain policies, there are certain protocols like that will always be there. And even if we're our best versions of ourselves, like there is this drive in the community to create something that's not JFS, that can kind of flex on some rules, be informal, and that there's a certain level of trust that exists in the Orthodox community to go to an organization for help that's not JFS. Like when you're asking about it, like a duplication, there's more trust there. Even if the JFS in the community is stepping up. I don't know if that answers your question at all.
So people don't trust JFSs as much as they trust their own communities. Is that what you're saying? Their own Orthodox community?
I think so. But I think that's also about it just being more formal. I think that people like to do things in an informal way. I think that we do sometimes ask questions that some of these local organizations don't ask. And it's almost impossible to avoid that. You know, they have a lot more discretion with their funds and documentation. Mm-hmm. And I could see why certain members of the community would gear towards that, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's only trust. I think it's also lack of awareness on the part of the Orthodox community, not knowing the services that are being provided by, you know, all of the different Jewish, you know, agencies. They're just not aware of it. And also, by the way, Liz, regarding in Cincinnati, you're always going to find these do-gooders that are not exactly qualified as they should be. And you have to work with it politically and have them understand that you, of course, welcome everything that it is that they're doing, but, you know, we have the professionalism to add to what they're doing to make it even better and try to work with them. And that, again, that involves the rabbis and it involves the Orthodox lay people to help you do that.
David, what were you going to say?
I agree with what Ewai said, and I want to really thank Carol for describing her experience in San Diego. And I think the decision to lean in and to be willing to work together is such a wise decision. I've seen in Chicago that there's a kind of nimbleness to grassroots organizations and efforts that bubble up in the Orthodox community, and they often have 5 or 6 years of fantastic vitality. And then often they are based on a few individual people who kind of move on to other projects, maybe donors who move on to other things. So we've seen these flashes of light, which can be scary for us because they are attracting so much attention. And then within 5 or 6 years, it's like they never existed. I'm not saying that's true of every. So I think the decision to work together, not to be threatened, we have to have the long view, I think, right? I mean, our professionalism can be off-putting for people, but we're here for the long term. I mean, we're here for like 160 years. We're not like a 5-year thing. So we just have to believe in ourselves and work with people. And as we're all saying, get the word out, invite people to learn more about what we offer. And if someone else is doing something nimble and great, they're going to come back to us. They will. You know, I we have to have confidence that we have to grow, we have to learn, we have to be more culturally competent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we have to have faith in our own capacity to do meaningful work for whoever wants to come to us, whoever we can engage. There, that's my.
So if anyone wants that little snippet every day, I could maybe record that and send it out to you when you're feeling, you know, down. Just, that was really good and inspirational, right? What about other people here in, on the call?
I can build on like what was said. I think like we, and I'll speak for Sammy and myself, we worked together, like we had to own our identity a little bit to say, okay, we are JFS. Like we do have policies. They're there for a reason. We are professionals. That's a choice that we make. And then there's pros and cons of that choice. And sometimes we need to do a better job selling the value of JFS. Like, yes, there's paperwork, but also it means that we're assessing for abuse. We're assessing for suicidal ideation. Like, what's the value of the process? So it's not just red tape or asking for paperwork, because it's really easy to get stuck on those. And sure, that takes longer. That may be a barrier. And there's a reason why. Like, and I think getting back to here's the value that brings. There are always going to be times, like to Sammy's point, I think there are times that someone's going to want to go to their neighbor, their rabbi, their community member, and wonderful that the grassroots organizations exist for that purpose and that person. And where's our role and feeling comfortable in that? And there are times that we felt more pressured and more threatened by partners, and times when we said like, well, if they're doing this, we're working with an organization right now that wants to get the focus on maternal mental health, and they're not mental health providers. So it's saying, can we partner? Can we explain, here's the value of what JFS can bring to the efforts you're trying to do? And then we're along for the ride. It enhances the services they were going to provide anyway to the community. And it like reminds them that we have something to offer. And that's not, sometimes it's a little thankless and sometimes it's frustrating. But I think it's worked for us as a way to stay in the conversation and have the community continue to see our name and see our involvement and our commitment to the community.
I have a couple of things to say. I think also when somebody in the Orthodox community needs help and they go to smaller entity, I think they want to preserve their privacy, and they're thinking maybe if they go to a big organization that, even though they don't realize there's HIPAA and all of that, so they just want to keep it under the radar. I think that, you know, that might be one aspect. And the other thought is that it's a good idea to have a point person at a JFS who really understands the Orthodox community. So if they need consultation, that they know they can go to that person to get direct, especially with the challenging case.
And I can jump in on that and mention that we have at various times contracted individually with, for example, the Orthodox schools that have come to us specifically for consultation and paid for it per consultation when they have a difficult family situation or child abuse questions, legal and ethical kinds of things. So there are ways to partner that are a little different, that are unusual also, but that speak to their recognizing our expertise and our respecting their circumstance. That has worked very well for us and continues to work well. But I think, David, your point was so incredibly well taken, because it's easy to get caught up in the moment and to think that we have to be all things to all people. I'm finding also that in the area of mental health in greater LA, there is, you know, now ever more the use of peers within the professional mental health delivery system. The county has now certified peers. And there's a similarity here, because it's the paraprofessional, the people who know the community and the individual and have life experience within that group, that sometimes bring another level of capacity and expand our reach. and partner with professionals to really deliver the most effective services. So that's another way to look at it, because peers are of the community. And rather than seeing it as something outside of yourself, there can be useful partnership. Anyone else with input on this?
Ronnie, you've been quiet. I'm sure you have something to say.
I mean, not much more than what everybody in the group has, you know, already offered. I think we all have experienced this in different ways, in different times. And, you know, we are big picture. We are agencies. We are professionals. We are bound by, you know, ethics and guidelines. But at the same time, we all got into this field because we're givers and we're empaths and we want to help people, the most vulnerable people amongst us, through whatever challenge they're facing, whether it's mental health, whether it's food insecurity, whether it's vocational. And for us as individuals, balancing that and then working for agencies that sometimes share or have slight differences in our, you know, own personal values, and then working in communities where we either are part of those communities and therefore feel the tension because we know what it's like to straddle that, or are, you know, feel as an outsider in the community. I think all of those are factors at play. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, this is our job and we are committing to do it in the best way that we believe we know how to do. And, you know, I think sharing with peers, both in a professional way, as well as, you know, from a client standpoint, in a supportive and collaborative way, is how we all move forward in a positive way in all of this. So I think just having these conversations is wonderful.
Thanks.
And one of the things we've done in LA here is where we've had a day where where we have JFS that has special educational trainings, for example, how to care for an older adult. And so they really get to learn, you know, all the different types of services that we can provide to the elderly, or, and I'm sure in other areas of our agency as well, but we've had several of those. And we call it How to Honor Your Mother and Father. And it's strictly for the Orthodox community. And we actually had somebody how to do a halachic will. It was really very well received. So I think having that partnership with synagogues and educating the community helps people understand what we can offer.
Right. Julie, you had your hand up.
Oh. Hi, so I'm sorry I was late. So I'm going to apologize if you already talked about this in the time before I got here. But first of all, my name is Julie, and I work at Journey to Safety, which is a domestic abuse program at Jewish Family Children's Service in Greater Boston. And one of the conversations that we've had, especially this year, is kind of balancing this tension between being an organization that serves the Jewish community and being an organization that serves the wider community and tightly and deeply grounded in Jewish values. Helping donors and supporters understand that those are connected things, but they're not the same thing. And, you know, kind of, it's a little bit more nuanced of a message, but providing the work through this lens of Jewish values and Jewish obligation is really important. And so, like, for my program, we provide services to any domestic abuse survivor who calls us. So that's grounded in Jewish values, but isn't Jewish specific. But we also have a specific, you know, response for Jewish survivors who are coming and want to talk about the cultural pieces, want to talk about the observance pieces, need some specific help. The food pantry provides food to lots of people. You don't have to be Jewish, but they're also the only kosher food pantry in New England. So that for folks who specifically have that want to request all kosher food, they can get it. And so I think some of the conversation that we have to have with donors and the community and ourselves is holding these two things about serving the Jewish community and living Jewish values, and separate them a little bit so that we can talk you know, enthusiastically about both sides of the work.
It's, I think we're at the point that we need to wind down, but that was a great spot to end, because it's an invitation for all of us to also think creatively and big picture, and at the same time, keep our eyes on where we want to focus most. Hopefully this is helpful to everyone. We're all coming from different size agencies, and the questionnaire that we're gonna ask you to fill out, that we're gonna send out here, it just showed up in the chat, is asking some of the more detailed questions about the size of your agency, what would be most useful in this format, breakouts, smaller topics, larger topics. So we want your feedback, because now we've had a couple of these meetings and we'd like to hear how you'd like to proceed as we go forward. We want to remind everybody about the, I'm sure, extraordinary training coming up on May 11th. We certainly enjoyed the first one and look forward to hearing from the team on the next one. More information will come out about that from Lisa. Anything
David
else?
David or Danny might be able to talk to it a little bit better.
I also, can I just add one thing about that? So for the training, the goal is to highlight different subgroups within the Orthodox community, just recognizing there's not one community, there's many different communities. As Lisa said before, we want to have a panel of different network professionals who work with the communities, maybe are from the communities themselves. And the subgroups we identified, I'm just gonna read this off so I don't miss out on it, is the modern Orthodox community, Sephardic, Lubavitch or Chabad, Hasidic, and Litvish, or we don't know, have a better word for Litvish, Lithuanian, Yeshivish, to be determined, that term. And we are looking for volunteers or people who'd be interested, if they have experience in their NJHSA role in working with the community and perhaps would like to be on the panel. We really want to get a variety of voices, so it's not just the same people speaking, but we're hearing from different perspectives. So if anyone would be interested in either themselves participating, or if you have a recommendation of a coworker or someone you've met through the network, if you could follow up with myself or David or Liz or Lisa, that would be really wonderful. We're trying to put this together pretty quickly. We want to get our panelists lined up, but we need some help with recruitment. So I would appreciate it. And I'll put the categories in the chat just so people can
see. We do have someone from JFS LA who will be talking with us about the Sephardic community.
Great.
So
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And if you all, while we're here, can fill out that survey, or at least begin to do that.
We really want to know.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining us. We will hopefully see you next time.
We still have a little bit of time while they fill out this form, right?
Oh,
or I guess they can do it on their own. You're right. I'm so wrong. Peggy's right.
After.
Right. So
before you wrap up, can I just ask one question? I know that I think you may have solicited kind of like starting a shared space to capture, I don't know, documents that people have created, something like that. I was curious if anyone has a style guide that their marketing uses. I just happened to be reviewing a report that was about our work in the Jewish community. And it felt very much like I was the one who said to say, well, you pluralized Havaraz here, but use, I don't know, Kippot here, or you didn't use a dash in God, or, you know, some of these things that just like need to be formalized for our marketing department as they're putting reports of messaging out. And also like putting the dash in God to me was like, if you're expecting the Orthodox to respect it, you know, or many other Jews as well, right, to respect kind of your messaging in the community, like you also have to make it accessible and yet honoring a diverse set of kind of how that shows up in people's observances. So I was starting to investigate whether there are style guides available online for other Jewish organizations. So I just don't know if anybody on this call has something already established for their marketing department, but I'd love to look at it.
Well, if they do, send it to me and I'll put it into the resource library so that everyone can use it. And I just sent you in the chat if you don't know how to get into the resource library, cut and paste that, because it's the same way to get in for any of the affinity groups, but you'd be looking for working with Orthodox communities. Does anyone here have a style guide that she's talking about?
So I don't, but to Carol's point, one of the challenges I've been experiencing is more like photo stock images in marketing, where anytime you look for images for the Orthodox community, they are very polarizing, where it's either too over the top, too much, or not at all. And so, you know, if anybody has any kind of, you know, go-to places for images, I found myself often pulling pictures of my own family and friends when I'm doing certain things, because, you know, they just, as far as we've seen, don't exist in the world. And so, you know, I think kind of creating that lookbook also may be something of value if people have photos and images that they use for different things.
That would be great. We talked about that last time as well. Yeah. Send it to us. And I think that Detroit gave us something.
Right.
Which was so terrific that someone, I think, talked about in the chat that they used it.
Detroit gave a cartoon, but actually Zisa mentioned this issue also. And we talked about maybe collaboratively, like hiring someone to take some stock photos for all of us to be able to draw upon, because it doesn't sound like they exist.
Yeah, so I wasn't at that meeting because we were traveling that day. And so I had spoken to Zisa before the meeting and asked her to bring it up and see if like anyone knew anything. And we as an agency have talked about, you know, doing a one-day photo shoot and, you know, offering, you know, publicizing that this is what we're doing and people can have copies of the photos as long as they give us permission to use them for whatever purposes we want to use them for. But with COVID, that hasn't really been able to be something that we've been able to actualize on. But yeah, you know, if things exist, we obviously don't need to recreate the wheel, but.
Well, I'll ask Ruben if he knows of anything and if there's anything the network can do that I'm hearing about this right now, you know, to move forward with that.
Awesome, thank you.
That could be good. So, Peggy, please, you were right. We can continue to do this survey afterwards. Was there anything else that you or Susan wanted to say before we
We're appreciative of everybody's input and look forward to the next one. And in the meantime, we'll see you in between.
Absolutely.
And have a wonderful Passover.
Yes.
Yes. Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.